And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Last call for Chicago!
Ladies and gentlemen,
the time has come.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
The Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
Coach? Hodge?
Get in another corner!
Hogan!
From CHGO, it's Adam Hogue, and from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
It's one of the craziest games that I've covered live. But that crazy for me.
I feel like, how many times a season do we say that?
Yeah, but this one, like,
I know.
In the red zone.
I'm not disputing what you're saying. I'm just like, how does this franchise keep doing this?
Anyway, who cares?
Here they are, the Adams, Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in. Hogan Johns back with you. And everybody's in full Justin Fields injury panic. Or maybe not. I feel like fans are also just like, okay, we've seen enough of this year. Let's go to next year.
There is that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm okay with that. I'd still like to see a little bit more. Or put it this way. I don't want to see Trevor Simeon. With all due respect to Northwestern and Trevor Simeon, I like to see a little bit more of Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields would like to see a little bit more of Justin Fields.
Yeah. Well, I agree too, because I feel like he was really starting to turn a corner, honestly, in the passing game.
And some signs were there.
And then they just ran him into the ground when he wasn't healthy.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Well, that's what, how many times do we talk about it? When you're not 100%, you're more prone to injury. If Justin Fields' legs were 100%, he would have easily beat that guy out of bounds. He never even would have been hit. He never would have been on the ground. But clearly he was cramping. Clearly he was tired. He made a cry for help in his press conference last week. I'm tired. My legs are tired.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy was the word.
Okay. His legs are heavy, which means they're harder to move, which means he's not as fast as he usually is. And then, by the way, he was really, really good in the fourth quarter throwing the ball. So they ran him. Yeah. Okay. What are you going to do? Can't, every play call can't be great. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns. You could read us at Johns. He's on The Athletic, theathletic.com/HoganJohns, where this podcast is hosted. And you can find me at allchgo.com. I have a column that is unlocked for everyone to read on yesterday's happenings with Justin Fields and the fallout from the injury. So go check that out. And what else? Merch is up, obviousshirts.com. Everything you buy in the month of November, and November is flying by here quickly. So everything you buy in November, a portion of the proceeds go to 22Q Family. So thank you to everyone who has contributed there. Check out the 22Q Family Foundation. If you just like to make a donation directly too, that works as well. We'll have voicemails for you today from Sunday's loss to the Falcons. We will also have a conversation that Johnsy had with Mike Jones, the Athletic, one of the national writers for the Athletic, who's got some stuff coming on the second-year quarterbacks. And John Z had a nice conversation with him, so we'll bring that to you here in a little bit as well. But yeah, let's talk about this this field stuff. Where do you want to start, Johns? I feel like we haven't heard your
thoughts on it.
Yeah,
I'm guessing. Well, are you buying what Matt Eberflus is selling about his sideline process? That Justin Fields, in their opinion, or even Justin Fields' opinion, was good to go for everything in that final possession? And are you buying what he's selling about the... well, I'm buying this. It does look like there was a mistake. There definitely was a mistake on that draw play. That was a draw for David Montgomery. Watch it again. You could tell that Fields is looking to hand that off. So, but
well,
in terms
well,
of...
Montgomery is looking to get the ball.
Oh, you think it's Fields?
And go watch it. Yeah, Montgomery, it's like, you know, it's like a draw. You pause for a second. So it's just kind of a slow developing. And then Montgomery puts his arms out like this for the ball.
And Fields never delivers it, yes.
And then Fields just like, I don't know what he was doing, if he's worried about his shoulder. You almost wonder
if he, obviously there was a miscommunication in the play call, whether or not the pain that he was feeling impacted his ability to get that play call in correctly. Do you know what I'm saying? Like where you're just like, oh crap, like, what was that? Okay, got part of the drop, not the complete play call of the drop. But anyway, are you buying what he's selling about the Bears feeling good about Justin Fields for everything in that final drive?
In terms of them feeling good about him being able to execute it?
Run.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I mean, at a minimum, they missed the mark and they didn't have their evaluation correct about
what he was flawed.
At a minimum.
Trusting the player too much?
Yeah, I think there's part of that. I mean, we had this. This is now, honestly, we've had three players now in the last 2 weeks where this has been a conversation. You know, Jalen Johnson last week, Tevin Jenkins pregame.
But on the opposite side of the conversation.
Right, where they're, you know, maybe Jenkins is the only one being fully honest about how he's truly feeling, which is part of the problem. Like, this goes back to what I talked about last week, Johns, which is if you're going to really, truly leave it up to, and I asked Matt this question on Friday, and I kind of thought he danced around the answer, but the reality is, you know, the trainer gives you a black and white, cleared or not cleared. That's pretty much what it is. Sometimes they'll be like, well, I think he can do this, I think he can do that, but like, he should be good to go.
But isn't that influenced by, we're not talking about a pulled hamstring here, by the way, we're talking about cramping, which hurts, it affects you. A lot of that information they get is from the player. I'm not blaming Fields. I think his toughness has come to embody the Chicago Bears anyway. If anything, I think where I'm going with this conversation is I want to give the Atlanta Falcons a little bit more credit for having a good game plan to defend Justin Fields.
Well, they did have a good game plan. And that's where I think I'm coming from in what I wrote yesterday. Is you just got to take the whole picture. And the whole picture to me starts with Fields admitting last week that his legs are heavy. So it shouldn't really come as a shock, cramps or no cramps, that after he ran relatively heavily in the first half still, that his legs are tired, heavy, run out of gas, whatever you want to put it, in the second half. I don't think that's a shock to anyone. It shouldn't have been a shock to those coaches on the sideline, right? You have also the fact that, to your point, the Falcons defended him well, especially in the second half. He only had 7 yards, I believe, in the second half running the ball. And a few of those were picked up on that last scramble. So the running game was, quite frankly, a non-factor in the second half. And he was really good throwing the ball on the drive before when they tied the game. Multiple third down conversions. Still using his legs enough to scramble.
Yes. Well, that's what I was wondering whether or not, now he wasn't running the ball and getting yards, but I mean, that scramble, that Equanimeous St. Brown pass, that's in the second half, is it not? That's in the fourth quarter, is it not?
Yes. Yes, that's third and 12 on the previous drive. He picked up 14. It helped set up the touchdown.
And what's the next gen stats on that? He ran 33 yards to make that completion, broke 3 tackles by my count. I'm coming off as if I'm defending the Bears here, but like that would be a recent example of him being, he did look okay. He did. He just made that amazing play where he broke 3 tackles going left from right, kept his eyes down the field and hit Equanimeous St. Brown. No? Not buying it?
Well, I am buying it in the sense that this goes back to the scrambling versus design runs, right? If you put the quarterback out there to throw the ball, he's got to be able to scramble. And some can do it better than others. Fields can. So that's part of the equation. And so that's where I'm coming from, where it shouldn't always be black and white. Yeah, he's cleared. He's good to go 100%. That's not always realistic. Sometimes you're 70%. Sometimes you're 60%. Okay? So if you're taking in that information on the sideline, okay, we think he's good enough to be out there to throw the ball and scramble if he needs to. But hey, maybe it's a good idea for us to not run him on design runs here, because he's probably not going to be as effective. And even if he is, he might not be able to protect himself in the same way. Does that make sense?
We had it under control, the cramps. We know he's dealt with that before, because obviously he puts a lot of energy during the game. I think we're missing a word there. And we're going to call our plays that we think are best there. So that's what we did, and we went with it. That is Matt Eberflus Monday breaking down that very question, whether or not Justin Fields is feeling okay.
Did you also get the sense that when Flus was asked about protecting Fields and being smart running the ball, he seemed to put a lot of that on Fields?
I also sense that he's fed up with the officials.
Oh, well, that should, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%, he should be. Yeah, he did go on a little mini rant about how they have to protect the quarterbacks more.
Yes.
But hey, if he's been sending 1 to 2 clips in every single week, and there have been 1 to 2, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And I can remember too vividly from the Atlanta game that weren't penalties.
So don't you think the NFL officiating office's response right now is just, eh?
Yeah.
Because they're not calling it any differently.
Al Riveron calls for no good reason.
They have these discussions. Like, hey, you know, this has been an issue in the last few weeks. You know, not getting the calls. You know, let's watch for this. And they're just like, nah, we're good. We don't need to call anything.
I think if there's any source of frustration with maybe Fields in this, I'm just spitballing here, is that I do think there's some cases where some throws with anticipation would eliminate a run or two, a scramble or two, a hit or two after that, because that's where he has to improve. JT O'Sullivan on our podcast last week at this time spelled it out great for us. Some of those throws are there, even with so-so protection for him to make, and they're turning into scrambles, they're turning into hits, they're turning into sacks, all the above. So maybe that's where some of the frustration lies, to your point, but I was more left taken by the frustration with the league. Like, Justin Fields was down on a knee and got nailed. Justin Fields was already sliding and got nailed in the head in the most important sequence of the game. Right? Already feeling hurt.
Hello, just, everyone. This is Al Riveron.
It's a problem. Now, I thought earlier in the season he was getting a few calls, but that's gone now. He's not anymore for some reason. And the Bears have every reason to be baffled by it and pissed off by it.
Yeah, I don't get it. It seems like if you're a non-running quarterback, you get the calls. Or they call it if you're in the pocket still. I mean, the contrast between what Kyler Gordon did, as he's literally falling down, by the way. Like, Kyler Gordon tripped as he was blitzing. Like, he fell over his own feet and sort of like accidentally barely rolled into Mariota's leg. And that rule, by the way, is written with forcible contact. And it's not too hard to argue that was not forcible contact.
It's like he tried to tie his shoe.
Yeah. Someone said that he just was trying to give him a foot massage.
That's the most frustrating thing about all of that, right? Is there's no consistency at all. Like, I got in the moment that it looked bad, it did. It's a fast game. In the moment that it looked bad, he had a defender at the knees of the quarterback. But in reality, it wasn't bad. You know what also looked bad in the moment? Grady Jarrett hit Justin Fields in the head, you know, with his shoulder and his own helmet. That's bad in the moment, too. That looked late.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get the criticism about the play call. I do want to see Justin Fields throw more in those situations. Just overall for his growth. Like, let him do it with his arm. I get that. Like, this is almost the balance between like trying to win now and develop. Like, let's try winning while developing. I get that the run game is working right now, but maybe it's reading the situation. Maybe it's understanding what the Falcons are doing. But I would have liked to seen Justin Fields throw more there, just for the overall experience of throwing more there with 2 minutes left in the game, so he could do it. So he could try to do it.
And John, that's honestly where I'm coming from more than anything. Once I went back, because I'll be honest, like sometimes when you're watching the game live, you kind of miss some of the nuances a little bit. But like, I knew he had a really good drive before that. It was obvious to anybody watching the game. But when I went back and watched it and was able to watch the replays over and over again, it was like, no, he was really playing quarterback at a high level. He was going through his reads. He was making a pre-snap read to Cole Kmet, knew exactly where to throw it. Then he used his scrambling ability to get that ball to EQ on the next third down. The throw to Montgomery down the sideline was actual quarterbacking, where he's directing traffic and making sure he gets, you know, that was so impressive. So for all these critics out there that are saying he can't throw, he doesn't do it in the fourth quarter, he can't make the big plays in the fourth quarter with his arm, he did it.
Yeah.
He literally did it on the last drive to tie the game. So now, because the defense can't get a stop ever, you're losing. You got 2 minutes left, 147 to be exact. Why don't you build on the last drive?
Yeah.
He just did it. Let him do it again. Instead, sprint out to the left. Like, come on.
He was 3 for 3 for 51 yards. The long of 32, which was a pinpoint brilliant pass on the run down the right sideline to David Montgomery before throwing that interception on his last play of the game. That was in the fourth quarter. Sorry. Those were his fourth quarter stats, 3 for 3. I actually still want to give like the defense like a little bit more credit, because I know they didn't get the stop there, but the Bears offense still outscored the Falcons. offense. That special teams touchdown by the greatest kickoff returner. I didn't say returner, it's kickoff returner, and Cordell Patterson changed the game in my opinion. But yes, we saw him do some things a bit off script in that fourth quarter, but yet so special, like stuff you can't teach. Yes, you want to see him throw with more anticipation, but the special throws are already there, like the off script, off schedule. Can't teach. Not everybody can do it. Plays are there for Justin Fields in the passing game.
All right, before we get to Mike, so how would you handle this here going forward? And there's obviously some conflicting information on what the hell the injury actually is.
I would rest him a week, 2 weeks. You want, what, you got the Packers after this? Maybe you bring him back for the Packers game. You got the bye week after that. I think it's a case... I said this after the game, we have to protect the player from himself a bit.
Yeah.
And you have to take the larger picture into serious consideration here. This isn't like, you're what, 3-8? Is that the record right now?
And so you're not playing for anything other than development at this point.
Yes. Yes. Give the kid a break. You know what? Your locker room will be okay with that. Some of those players that know they're going to be here next year, they'd be okay with that.
His legs clearly need a break. So if you're going to throw him out there, again, with heavy legs, now a bum shoulder, that could impact his mechanics.
He did. He said it himself. It did.
I don't see any bright side, right? If you're competing for the NFC North title, sure, gut it out. You know, he's your best player. There's no question about it. He is your offense. I really can't think of one reason. Now, if we're talking shut him down for the season, to me, that's a different...
I'm not there yet, because I still would like him to get more throws in. It's honestly, I get like, oh, you know, how much more experience does he need? But he does need it. just said he needed it because I'd like to see him throw the ball more and try to hit some anticipation throws, some timing throws. I like to see him hit the top of his drop and get the ball out. Sometimes I think the Bears would like to see that. So there is value in him still playing. But if he's hurt, there is that risk of further injury. You have to, again, seriously consider the long-term outlook for your team here, given all the success that he had this year.
I totally agree. And I tend to think that's what's going to happen.
Yes. Here. Yes.
I think you might have...
Say it.
What?
You gonna say it? I was going to say Trevor Siemian versus Joe Flacco in New Jersey.
I mean, if I'm the Jets, I play Mike White.
Yes. Actually, yes.
I mean, it's one thing if you're just trying to fill in for a week for Zach Wilson, but this is a different conversation. Now, Zach Wilson, probably not their guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's bad and a pain in the ass. And I think he pissed off a lot of people in that locker room with what he said post-game.
You almost want to give him an opportunity, like in terms of long-term development. That's a unique situation there. The Jets are a winning football team with a lot of young players playing great. And you have a young quarterback who is not helping the situation by any means. Do you give him the opportunity to grow, learn, and get over it? Or like that's... Like with all due respect to the winning the Jets are doing, you're not winning the Super Bowl this year. I still think you need to focus on the long term prospects of Zach Wilson. But again, he pissed everybody off in that locker room. I'm guessing he did.
Now we're doing a Jets podcast.
I'm speculating.
But it is the Bears opponent this week. I'll be honest. Despite that happened, this is his second overall pick. He used a lot of draft capital. Yes. I look at the matchup this week. You're facing a bad Bears defense and a team that's probably not going to have Justin Fields out there. If there is an opportunity to get Zach Wilson back on track for at least 1 week to build some of that confidence back, this sure as hell looks like it, doesn't it?
Yes.
So I think I'd probably still play him this week. But it might be a last
he might have
chance
the
situation.
Old quick hook if he throws an ugly interception in the
sure.
Again, I think at one point the Jets are just going to go for the win and try to work it out later because this is a win they need to have in terms of the standings.
Yeah, they can't afford to lose this game.
No.
So, all right, you want to set up this conversation you have with Mike Jones?
Yeah, he's got a big story coming out on Wednesday that comes up. Well, let's just get into it. I think Mike Jones brings a lot of nuance and interesting things to the quarterback conversation, whether it's the Bears or the second-year guys in general. All right, let's bring in Mike Jones. You can follow him on Twitter at by Mike Jones. Sorry, let's get that right. At by Mike Jones. He's our new national writer for The Athletic. You may know him previously from USA Today, and you were at the Washington Post. Long career covering the Commanders. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, how are you doing, Adam?
Very good, very good. First question for you. How often is that Mike McDaniel clip brought up to you?
Between that and the Lamar Jackson, it's quite a bit. But like the thing is like it's been going on since 1997 or something like that.
Yeah.
I was covering high school sports in my hometown in Warrenton, Virginia, and I walked into the school one day and everybody started yelling Mike Jones. So I was like, wait, you guys know me. Yeah, you know. And then I found out. So, yeah, it's every locker room. It's every time I meet somebody. So those guys doing it. Like Mike McDaniel, every time he's seen me since 2012 when I covered him when he was with Washington.
I forgot about that. Yes.
He always does that. So when he did it in the press conference, I wasn't at all surprised because, like, the last time I was in San Francisco before that, like, he was, like, yelling at me across the practice field. Oh. So that's just Mike McDaniel for you.
We've joked that we have to get him on this podcast because we are big fans of his, just the personality that he shows, right? Like, there's a lot there. He doesn't mind being himself. Even, like, taking over as head coach, he's just himself.
No, he's very comfortable being himself. And it's funny because when Mike Shanahan hired all those guys, it was like, oh, Kyle's bringing his drinking buddies. And I remember seeing Mike McDaniel and he just seemed so awkward and out of place. And we were like, who is this guy? I mean, like Matt LaFleur was very like detailed and like, you know, he was Kyle's right-hand man working with the quarterbacks. Sean McVay was high energy. And McDaniel, like, he kind of, like, seemed like a stoner. And you're just like, what does this guy really even know about anything? And then it was at the Senior Bowl one year. And they coached, I think it was 2011, maybe. That was 2012. So 2010 was when I first started coming. 2012. And he was hanging out there and talked to him in Veets. That's a little hole in the wall bar down there.
Yeah, well, I know it well.
Yeah, you know it. You know it. Anybody who's covered that thing knows that place well. It's packed like, you know, sardines. And I remember talking to him. I was like, this guy's weird, but he's actually really smart. And as a joke, one of my buddies who covered them was like, dude, watch in like 6 years, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be an NFL head coach. And we laughed and we're like, yeah, no way. And I was out in San Francisco this past year for training camp. And Kyle was even like, dude, can you believe Mike McDaniel is a head coach now? And he's known him since they were together, you know, and growing up in Denver and then in Houston. And he's followed him everywhere. And even he's shocked that he's a head coach. So yeah. It's pretty funny just to see where he's grown and that he has not changed. It's great. It's refreshing. And you like to see him do well.
I fully support the decision to hire a head coach that is under 6 foot tall, wears glasses just like I do. That's why we want him on the podcast. We all wear glasses here sometimes. He's got the big forehead just like the rest of us.
You got to work on your hair game, though. You don't have quite enough product in there.
It's too early here in Chicago, and we just got a haircut yesterday. Not a lot to work with here. My partner, Adam Hogue, though, wears plenty. But we're not here to talk about Mike McDaniel. Justin Fields is the story here in Chicago. And I want to ask you, Mike, about something you wrote a couple weeks ago. This was after the Lions loss for the Bears. Felt like a win a little bit here in Chicago, but a loss for the Bears. As the Bears coaching staff continues to embrace his strengths, Fields is looking like the best quarterback from the 2021 draft. I know, it's still early, but still. What do you like about Justin Fields' game right now?
I like that he's starting to look comfortable, and now that he's comfortable, you've seen him be more aggressive, whether it's running the football or, you know, and now we're starting to see him start to use his legs to extend plays and make some throws. The way that they're designing plays, and because the defense is so worried about him running, they're getting, you know, more openings in the pass game. And again, he's got a lot to work on still, but as far as a playmaking standpoint, there's nobody in that draft class who is making the kind of plays that he has. Yes, I know there are a lot with his legs, but I think it's going to come. You can tell after, you know, he was misused, you know, before. And look, lean into what he does well. Help him get comfortable. I remember I go back to 2012 when Washington had RG3. They really overhauled their offense. They installed a lot of the RPOs. And then as the season went on, by the midway point, they really were opening up the passing game more. But it was about getting him comfortable so he feels and remember what it feels like to be that guy like he was in college. And you're able to play faster that way. So it's very smart that they're using his legs, you know, using him in that way. So that way he starts to feel confident. He feels like assured of himself and starts to see the way the defense reacts and knows how to attack that way. So, you know, he's got a big arm. Again, has to work on some things. But the way he runs, I was talking to a number of people for stories. Steve Mariucci said he reminds him a lot of Cam Newton with the way that he's powerful. I know they're built a little bit different, but he's not an Lamar Jackson type of runner. I've heard maybe some people say, you know, like Michael Vick, but he's kind of got his own style. But he is just – he's a playmaker right now really dangerous. And you like to see the progress and the growth.
Yeah, the Bears want him to work on throwing a little more anticipation, maybe some trust throws, you know, trusting that his guys will be there before they actually get open. But you're right. He's making plays you can't teach almost through experience. It's that 33-yard scramble. I'm not talking about like running down the field where he runs left to right, eludes three tacklers, and finds his receiver, Equanimeous St. Brown, for a first down. Like plays like that are just almost unteachable. He seems to have the special qualities already. It's more or less gaining the experience that's needed, right?
Right. He's got the go-off script type of, you know, play, to be able to freelance and things like that. But, you know, as I was doing the story and reporting, talking to Kurt Warner and Chris Sims and Mariucci, and every single one of them pointed to, look, their throws that he's leaving out there because, you know, he wants to see them very open where, dude, you got to fit it in a window. Sometimes you got to throw your receiver open. Sometimes you know what spot he's got to be in, put the ball in that spot so he can run to that spot. So that's what he's got to work on. Once he becomes comfortable with that, throws, like you said, with that anticipation, then that really opens things up. Right now it's like, you know, I know we get on young quarterbacks when they throw a lot of interceptions. It's not going to be perfect, though. The window opens and closes very quickly. He kind of like, it seems like he wants that window to be really open before he pulls the trigger, rather than kind of like saying, okay, he's going to be there in a split second. I'm going to throw it right here. I'm not throwing it right to the receiver. Right, I'm throwing it to a spot that only he can get to it.
Let's talk about your story. It's going to be out on The Athletic on Wednesday. Today is Tuesday. So if you're listening or watching on YouTube, be sure to check that out. You talked to Chris Sims, Kurt Warner, Steve Mariucci. Can I ask you about Chris Sims a little bit? Because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, he had him as like a sixth or seventh best quarterback in his rankings coming out in 2021.
Yeah, he wasn't as high on him coming out of the draft as some people were. But now he calls him the most incredible thing in football. You know, the most dangerous guy with the ball in his hands, the best running quarterback in the league. And he said, you know me, I'm a Lamar Jackson fan, but this guy is a better runner than Lamar Jackson. So he feels like, hey, he's a playmaker. All the things in the passing game are going to come. We're starting to see it. So he's very high on him. And even though it's very clear he's not a finished product, but he feels like, hey, this guy's got big playability. They're using him the right way now. Instead of, you know, the first, you know, stretch of the season, it was like they were trying to use him, you know, as Green Bay used Aaron Rodgers, because, you know, Getsy came from Green Bay. But now they're letting him play like himself. And because of that, you're seeing it pay off. And that's what Chris Sims was very high on now, just that playmaking ability and seeing the confidence in him.
I think he had Kellen Mond rated higher, at least in the conversation back then. Things change, I know, but I remember being struck by that, and things did not unfold great for him in Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, it was different. And I think, you know, was Mac Jones like one of his favorite guys? He was very high on Mac Jones. You know, and I know that he felt like, you know, there was, you know, athleticism from Justin Fields, but didn't see him, you know, quite as glowingly as he does now. But he was definitely very high on him now. And, you know, things change.
Yeah.
You realize, oh, hey, maybe, you know, I was wrong about this here. But either way, he's high on him now.
A couple record-setting running performances where he looks absolutely electric. We'll do that. Quickly, I don't want to give away the full story, so make sure if you're listening again right now, check it out on theathletic.com on Wednesday. But I'm curious more about Kurt Warner, who, you know, broke in late with the Rams, Super Bowl MVP, Hall of Famer, not exactly the same quarterback as Justin Fields, different systems with the Rams. What did he have to say about Justin Fields?
Yeah, totally different skill sets, but and he knows that a quarterback's not a finished product in year one or year two. You know, it took him a while, you know. Yeah. He was a backup for a while. He went to NFL Europe, came back over here, and then finally was in the right system and really was able to blossom. His biggest thing, he said, look, he's making incredible plays, but he's making them with his legs. There's so much to being a quarterback, and I'm not seeing that right now. Really, he wants to see that consistency with the decision-making, with anticipation, just like we were talking about. Those are the things he really harped on, is that, you know, it's okay. It's great to be an incredible talent. It's great to be an incredible athlete, but you're a quarterback, and you've got to make plays with your arm before we really say that you're, you know, one of the best out there. And so for him, he just wants to see that growth. Yeah, it's great, the runs, but he sees a lot of throws that he's leaving out there that could be helping his offense.
What do they have to say, I guess, about Fields in terms of the other guys in the draft? Of course, Zach Wilson is everybody's favorite story right now after what he said after that loss. It just he said one word, and, you know, the New York media just runs with it. So, like, how does he fit? What are they saying in relation to the other guys of that draft?
Warner said he's probably got the furthest to go as far as a passer of those guys. But playmaking ability, obviously, he's the most impactful right now. You know, Chris Sims, like I said, he's called him the most incredible playmaker in football, one of the most dangerous guys. Put him up there with Tyreek Hill. as far as being, you know, one of the most dangerous guys with the ball in his hands. Steve Mariucci felt like, hey, he's doing some amazing things. And it's just a matter of giving him more playing time. He feels like he's got the right coaching staff. He's got the right system. It's just a matter of time. The more he's in these situations and, you know, third and long and fourth down and, you know, 2 minute situations, late game opportunities, that he's going to make some mistakes, but you only get better. You only, you know, learn those things by being in those situations. And he felt like, hey, he has an opportunity to really ascend and be one of the best young quarterbacks in the league right now.
Generally speaking, like, how do you feel about, like, the coverage of young quarterbacks? Like, whether it's on TV or, like, you know, like, on Twitter, we're forget Zach Wilson for a second. Like, a bad play is blown up and everybody overreacts, or one sound bite from, I don't know, Dan Orlovsky or someone just goes crazy. I'm just curious, like, in today's media world, how do you think young quarterbacks are handled?
I think that we overreact. I think we forget that, okay, look, it takes time. Even it was, you know, the week Zach Wilson missed the first three games of the season. They won two games, I think it was. They lost to New England. And look, he threw, I think, was it three interceptions, two touchdown passes. But people were just like ready to just, you know, freaking crucify him then. And it's like, it's Bill Belichick. He feasts on young quarterbacks. It's what he does. And so the fact that he had a bad game against the Patriots is not surprising to me. I think you have to have context. Now, you didn't see him. You would have hoped this game here, he would have made adjustments. I'm not saying they had to beat the Patriots, but you wanted to see him do better this time than what he did last time, show that he's progressing, and he didn't do that. But I do think that we're so quick. If these guys are not, you know, world beaters right out of the gates, then they're busts. And that's not the case. I mean, when you look also, what do they have surrounding them? What is the coaching staff? What is the offense? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, you know, he does not right now look like a guy that you would justify the number one overall pick. But again, it's very early. He's learning a new system all over again. If you have ever heard a quarterback read out the play and all the terminology and the mouthful that it is, it takes time. And so I do think that whether it's social media, whether it's, you know, analysis from reporters, we want to see that instant success. You want something to jump off the page to tell you, oh, this guy is a stud. And, you know, it takes a little time, you know, regardless of what the position is, but definitely the quarterback, because there's so much involved in that position.
Yeah, I think sometimes well, I'll put it this way. In Chicago, there's always that question, well, what if the Bears drafted Patrick Mahomes? And they would – I don't know if his career unfolds the same way if he's taken over Mitch Trubisky in this situation.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, what was the coaching staff situation then? Who did he have around him? Who was his mentor if he was in Chicago? What were the weapons? You know, I mean, Andy Reid is one of the best play callers, best, you know, architects for an offense that's in the game. So Patrick Mahomes fell into an amazing situation there. Say that, you know, I don't know who's a quarterback that's that looks kind of crappy right now. But when you look at what he's working with, it's not anywhere near. Even like Deshaun Watson, okay, in Houston. I mean, he was great, but they didn't have a lot of success. Because what did he have that he was working with, and how talented, how much of a visionary was the coaching staff that he was working with there? You know, it's just, there's a lot more than just, can this guy throw passes, that goes into it. And just because, you know, they passed on Patrick Mahomes, like you said, does not mean that Mahomes would have been a stud there. Maybe he would have been better. Maybe he wouldn't have. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, it looks like Mitch Trubisky kind of was not the guy to take.
Yeah. He's in Chicago, not the guy.
Not the guy to take now that he's in Pittsburgh. I mean, so, you know, maybe you got that wrong, but I'm not saying that Patrick Mahomes would have been amazing like the Patrick Mahomes we see right now if the Bears take.
Yeah, situations matter. Experiences matter. The help matters. I think we're seeing that play out with Justin Fields right now. All right, Mike, last one for you. Kind of a national question. Like, what are some of your favorite stories. Like, who are your favorite teams to, like, who are your contenders at this point? With, gosh, it feels so, the season feels so long now with 17 games, but
yeah.
Thanksgiving's here. Who are your favorite teams?
Obviously the Chiefs. You know, I know some people were wondering if they would take a step backwards. And looks like Mahomes is even better now than what he was. He's doing more with less. Yes, he still has Kelsey, but he's got a lot of young guys. And I felt like late in that game on Sunday, you saw him go to a bunch of guys who we didn't really even know their name. Like, who's number 84? Who is that? You know, 20, you know, it's just, he's got a lot of young guys in there. He's still the same guy. So I think he's fascinating. I'm really curious about Buffalo. Josh Allen, yes, an amazing talent, but we're seeing him press. And, you know, it's like he's trying so hard to be great. Maybe he's trying too hard. What happens the next time that they face the Chiefs? I really hope that we see them in the AFC yeah. Championship game against each other. That would be my Super Bowl just about. NFC, man, I don't even know. Because I finally was like, I'd been holding off on the Vikings, I had questions about them, and finally I was like, you know what? They're legit. They just beat Buffalo. And then they go out there and wet the bed against the Cowboys. And I'm like, this is what I get for believing in you, Kirk Cousins. So the Vikings, I think, are good, but I think that they're a team that could win any Sunday or lose any Sunday. The Eagles are a good team. They're legit. But because when you look at their defense, you look at what they have on offense. So, you know, I think they're good. But, I mean, the
Cowboys
come on for a stretch. Yeah. You know, the Cowboys, if they run the ball and then build off of that, then the Cowboys would be okay. If they try to have Dak Prescott drop back 50 times a game and abandon the run, then I think that, you know, they struggle. So the recipe for them is great defense, strong run game, and the pass game, you know, in that order. You know, the 49ers, I think, are going to be there at the end.
They're fun to watch now.
They're fun, really fun to watch. They've got a lot to work with. So, you know, we'll see. It's wide open, the NFC. It could change from week to week, but I think the AFC is pretty clear. It's Kansas City and Buffalo right behind there and everybody else.
I really like the 49ers right now and everything they're doing. Just too many weapons, and their defense is good as well. Mike, thank you so much. If you're watching, reading, or what have you right now, be sure to read your piece tomorrow on The Athletic on the second-year quarterbacks. Mike, thank you so much.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Mike. All right. Sorry if thanks I kept you a little bit longer there, but that was awesome stuff. Thank you.
No problem. Have a great one.
Oh, here's the other guy with the hair product. There's your hair product.
There you go. Mike McDaniel would be proud.
Yes.
Hey, I understand. Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
I'll be seeing you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Adam, what struck me most during that conversation with Mike, it's not so much that like Chris Sims has completely changed his outlook. Like he no longer has Kellen Mond ranked higher than Justin Fields. Like that's no longer the case for Chris Sims, like everybody else in the league. But it's interesting to hear what Kurt Warner has to say because I think it coincides with JT O'Sullivan said on this podcast, and this time it's coming from Kurt Warner. You like to see some anticipation throws. I think we've been very consistent with this. You and I have. You like to see him play within the pocket, but there are some things you just can't teach that Justin Fields does extremely well. It's that St. Brown completion. It's that Montgomery completion, all in the fourth quarter. He can do some great things for your team, but yes, experiences will help him develop. That's what I'm getting at. Like, you want throws with anticipation. You want him to trust the pocket. He's got to play more. He's got to see it more. I know we're here at Thanksgiving, but sometimes this is often the case for young quarterbacks. And this is his first year in Luke Getsy's offense. So there are some things he still has to get used to.
Yeah, I think one of the most encouraging things, I think the floor has risen, if that makes sense. Like I think the floor has risen considerably for Justin Fields. I think the question is just still, you know, where does that ceiling land? And I think everybody can see that the ceiling could be really, really high, but he absolutely has to grow still as a passer. And that's, again, I'm sitting here every week telling you and showing you plays where he's doing it. It's just got to be more consistent. And of course, the full context matters. And I don't think right now he's being given the best help to do all that. And that's why I was so encouraged by what he did in the fourth quarter against the Falcons on that last touchdown drive, because he wasn't getting a lot of help. Like, Michael Schofield wasn't playing well. That offensive line wasn't playing well. There wasn't much separation. Chase Claypool couldn't get lined up properly half the game, wasn't getting open when he was lined up properly.
There was a couple examples of that.
Absolutely. So, and Justin still made some huge throws. So, I do agree he obviously needs more reps and opportunities to throw the ball. I will admit, John, starting to get to this point, though, where I'm like...
The risk-reward?
Yeah, is that coming this season? Because I think part of why you've seen the Bears run so much with him is because I think there's a limit to how many of those passing plays they can actually even run within a game.
Yeah.
Where they're not going to get him killed or hurt his development because he doesn't have the options to really develop, if that makes sense,
because
nobody's helping him.
Yeah. You can put it this way. Like, you want to see Justin Fields throw with anticipation, but you also can't blame him if his footwork is off because he feels frantic in the pocket because he doesn't know when he's going to get hit.
Yeah.
The offensive line often had, like, this involves the tight ends too. Like, there's actually five or six in protection, and the Falcons, they would send four more often than not, and they would win. They would win. That's a problem. Like, Justin Fields feels it, then he sees it afterwards. Yeah, I think we've seen examples of what he could do when he has a good pocket. It's just not consistently there enough for him. So, Yeah, the risk reward. I would like to see him get more reps, take a few more risks with his throws, but at what risk does that come with actually the bodily damage that he could potentially face? That's the conversation they got to be having at Halasaw right now. Like, how much do you want him to risk further injury for his own development?
Well, and you heard it last week on this podcast when we had JT O'Sullivan on. By the way, he has another breakdown if you're one of his QB School Patreon members. 90 minutes this time on the Falcons game. So check that out. But, you know, when he so strongly comes out and says, this season's already a win for you, I'm willing to buy that and be like, all right, yes, there's still more you could squeeze out of this season for Justin. But if this is it, if this is the end of the season, it absolutely is a win for him. Get him healthy. Show up for OTAs in April. Do the whole thing again. But this time, he might have a real offensive line. He might have real weapons. He might have, you know, whether it's even a pass rusher you draft for him with the third overall pick, you know, more help on defense, whatever it is, a stud left tackle that you draft in the first round, a legitimate wide receiver. I don't know there's going to be one that goes in the top five, but, you know, the whole thing could look a lot different. And you just reset that thing going into year three. And based on what we saw this year, like, I don't think that sets him back at all. I just think it puts him in a much better position to continue to grow.
I agree.
By the way, I don't want to see that. I would much rather cover these last six games.
Yeah, with him, yes.
But
yes.
That's a selfish look at it.
I think, like, and again, like, Justin Fields is going to want to play. Say he sits out the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks because of the bye week. He's going to want to come back and play. And to that point, he probably will physically be good enough to play. I'm all for that. But, like, you hope Tevin Jenkins is back. You hope things are, like, Chase Claypool fully knows the playbook at this point. You hope you got better things going on.
Yeah. And by the way, I need him to come back for, because it probably will cost me a fantasy championship if he doesn't. So, that's most important.
He did beat my son in fantasy last week.
You did? Old
son. No, Justin Fields.
Oh, your son was going up against Justin.
Against Justin Fields, yes.
As you would say, nobody cares. Sorry.
Nah, my son cared, but yes.
Well, see, no, now you care.
I kind of care, yeah.
Let me ask you this, one last thing before we get to our voicemails. Do you think there's any value in beating the Packers next week? Do you force him? If he's feeling better and theoretically can play, is there any boost at all to finally getting that win over a slumping Packer team? Yes. Or does it really not matter?
Like organization, like I want to say, like it shouldn't matter as much as it does, but you know what? It does. Like what did George Halas say? Like, you know, just as long as we beat the Packers, like, and that type of mindset has been like passed down. And in a season like this, I think a lot of fans would feel this way. Like if the Bears finish 4-13. Thinking my math is right, 4-13, and one of those wins is over the Packers, they'll take that in the top five pick. Call it a good year.
Go Bears.
Right?
That's right, Aaron.
George McCaskey would be dancing up at Halas Hall if the Bears beat the Packers.
Yeah, but with Ryan Poles.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
He wants to win, yeah.
I think there's some value in it. I don't think it's necessarily something you absolutely have to have.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to risk Justin Fields' future over it.
No. And if you're the Bears and you're talking about like the difference between the fourth and like sixth pick, because that's what it's going to be. You have so many needs. Like,
I hate to tell you, there's a world where if you lose that or if you win that game against the Packers, the Packers could be picking ahead of you. They're only one game back of the Bears right now.
Yeah, but they're a team that may have to address quarterback sooner than than later. That's what I mean. The Bears have a quarterback, a young one, entering his third year. When you have a top five or six pick, your draft strategy is a bit different when you have a young quarterback you believe in.
Sure. Boy, that makes the quarterback carousel trade possibilities in the draft very muddy.
Yes.
If the Packers are one of those teams trying to trade up too.
Yep.
Boy, they should have traded Aaron Rodgers a couple years ago. All right. Let's get to your voicemails from Sunday's game against the Atlanta Falcons.
Hello?
Do you know who this is?
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
The Hogan John's voicemail. The Hogan John's voicemail line.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
Got any questions or comments about the Bears? Give the guys a call before, after, or even during the game.
Go Bears!
Oh, who's that with the fumble recovery? Jack Sanborn, baby. Go Bears!
Oh my gosh, Cole Kmet running hard, looking like Odell Beckham Jr. with that hell of a catch right there. Holy shit, bear down.
I know I called a couple weeks ago and apologized to Cole Kmet publicly, but I really need to do it again and probably keep doing it. I talked a lot of shit about him, and I was wrong.
Oh, you get Yonzi, babe. It's another week. It's another spectacle to be put on the Fox 32 channel here in the Chicagoland area. It is a 17-17 game is what I'm calling in with this. We got 5 minutes left in the third, and this is a step back, man. This is just brutal. Now, the defense has come to play this week. I got to give them credit. They've been keeping this in the game. But the offense, man, huge step back. Justin Fields, got to speed up that clock. Offensive line, Cody Whitehair can't be fucking running out to a screen for no reason. We got to get better. We got to get smarter. Bear down. We got to win this one. Let's go.
Abner stinks. That's it.
Another game, another failed two-minute drive at the end of the game. And how many f***ing times does Justin need to be hit for a penalty to be called when he slides? It's un-f***ing believable. This drive should still be happening as I'm calling you right now.
Hogan Johns, as always, love the show. This is Brian out in L.A. Let me give you a silver lining to today's game. Aside from obvious draft positioning, right? We now go to 3-8. Getsy's play calling on this last drive was so fucking stupid that it actually probably keeps him here as OC for another year instead of taking a head coaching job. Always here to look at the silver lining.
Hogue and Johns, I do not know what I'm seeing on my TV right now. We need to move the ball and score points in a two-minute drill. And I see quarterback runs. Who knows? But we got to win these games.
This is Mr. Anderson calling from Philly. I hated watching that game. I mean, I love Jack Sanborn. Tyler Gordon just ain't it. And why would you give up a second-round draft pick for a receiver and not make him a priority in the offense? Top five draft pick next year, Bears down.
Nope, that's not the ambulance for Justin Fields. That's the red alarm going off because we decided to have two quarterback runs. Watch him wince in pain on the sideline and then decide that we're not going to take him out of the game and then he throws an interception. That was malpractice. It was either malpractice or intentional tanking. I can't honestly tell the difference at this point. Bear down.
Hey, Bears fans, B-Man here. I've been saying it. We've got to get Justin some help. We're going to get him killed. Bear down.
That's right, B-Man.
Where's Bob? Did I miss Bob?
Nah, I was going to say.
Can't leave him out. There was a knockoff Bob in there, I think. No Bob this week?
Oh, man. Oh. Do we need to be worried?
Oh, no.
I'm a little worried.
Yeah, very worried. There was a knockoff Bob in there, though.
Yeah, but... Oh, no. Did the Bears kill Bob? Come on now.
Maybe.
Bob, they're so close. Yeah. Hang in there, buddy.
Maybe Bob is surgically removing his shoulder to donate to Justin Fields.
I could see him doing that. You know, Greg Bragg's got physically ill on the postgame show when he saw your video about...
Oh,
with Fields going off on the cart.
Getting carted off?
He literally got up, went to the bathroom, and threw up. I'm not kidding. That's a true story.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the truth is he may have been dealing with some vertigo or something, and it may have nothing to do with the video, but the timing was perfect where he literally walked off the set. We were very confused, and then he, yeah.
Fields injury-induced vertigo.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Bob. Hang in there.
Anyway, who cares?
I care. All right, anything else?
No. No. Be sure to check out Mike Jones's piece on Wednesday in The Athletic.
Who?
Should be a good one. I like that he...
Does he hate that? He probably hates
that. I know. So I asked him about that.
Yeah.
It's my first question. So when you listen back, Adam Hoge.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Okay. I will. Okay. That right there was a lesson in how podcasting gets done sometimes.
Yes.
A little behind the curtain.
How sausage is made.
Yeah. Hey, you know, sometimes you got to do it that way. Lives get in the way. Hey, follow us on Twitter at Adam Hoge, at Adam Johns. Appreciate Mike Jones.
Did you say wives get in the way?
Wives do too. I said lives, but wives as well. Going to be careful there. I want to tell you about one thing. If you are a CHGO diehard, tonight, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, Corey Wooten and I will be doing a virtual happy hour. So you can jump in, just hang out with us. It's going to be very informal, not really like a show or anything. So just a cool thing if you want to check it out for CHGO diehard members. Go to allchgo.com/diehard. And then you get the newsletter coming out tomorrow too. By the way, speaking of newsletters, I'm a big fan of the Athletic newsletter that comes out every morning too. It's one of the first things I read. You know, just you can kind of pick and choose what you want to
read.
Yeah, it's got links to stuff. I will say I don't think I've ever seen a link to anything you've written or a link ever to anything that this podcast has done. So, you know. But other than that, I really
You'll
like
see it next week now.
Yeah, probably. I'm just saying. I will say though, I was shocked when I opened the newsletter this morning and saw that Saudi Arabia beat Argentina. I think that game started at like 4 a.m. or something. So it was already over and it was already in my inbox. I was really impressed by that.
No, like I was not aware.
I know you don't care about soccer, but it was like...
No, I do care about soccer.
This is the biggest upset in World Cup history.
Really? That's what they're calling
Yes.
it? Okay. I don't know.
Crazy. So, anyway. Obvioushirts.com for the merch. One thing we got to tell you about too, your preview episode's coming a day early. Thanksgiving holiday, we know a lot of people travel on Wednesdays. So even though we'll probably be recording with having no idea who's playing quarterback for either team, we will get that for you tomorrow morning with a Wednesday preview edition. Doesn't make so much sense to do it on Thanksgiving. So if you're traveling, you got a couple episodes to listen to between this one and the preview episode coming out on Wednesday. So be looking out for that. That's all I got, Johnsy.
All right.
See ya. Anyway, who cares?